Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Guys, welcome to the Rick Shields Golf Show podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Rick Shields. I'm here with producer Guy. This is episode number 97. I feel like it's been a few days since I've seen you. You've been on holiday.
It is. Today's Monday. Last saw you on Wednesday. You've literally just walked through the door, what, 5 minutes ago?
Yes.
Not even really spoke. Right?
I'm like, come on, let's go. We've got to get a podcast done. I'm excited this week because it's one of my favourite weeks of the year.
Mm-hmm.
I know you've got slightly different opinions maybe, but I'm intrigued to know if it's going to change this week. It's the bloody Ryder Cup week.
It is Ryder Cup week.
I'm excited.
24th, is it that it starts?
I'm slightly gutted because I could have been there. Mm. I had an invite to be there, hospitality, every day, but the government restrictions at the moment, certainly in the... Would it be more from the USA side, isn't it?
Yes.
From the USA, unless I'm going over there for actual work, which really I'm not, unfortunately. I'm just going over for a bit of a jolly. I can't get a visa. I can't get a green card. I can't do this, that, and the other. I'd have to isolate for 20 days or whatever, however long it is. And that's not something I'm willing to do. As much as I love Ryder Cup, that's just not something
I'm
prepared to
do. Could you not say it was for work and got a few Instagrams?
I think I needed something, some clarification or something. It didn't quite work out. I looked into it. Bar literally getting a private jet and just sneaking in. I don't think I could have done it. But either way, I'm excited to watch on TV because it is one of my favourite events. I am fascinated, and I mean this to the most extreme level, I'm fascinated about Bryson DeChambeau at the moment.
Mm.
Like, crazy amount.
Did you watch that YouTube video I told you to watch?
I didn't watch that. Okay. I kind of saw clips. I saw what he posted on Instagram this weekend.
Not seen it.
Right. I took a screenshot of it. Get this, right? So he's there, smashing driver, okay? On Trapman, when it turned to Trapman, and he's absolutely smashing it. I'm not sure if this was regulation length driver, whatever it may be, but club head speed, he clocked 148 miles per hour.
148 miles. Did you say it was a regular driver, didn't it? Like a normal?
I don't know.
But it
was such a short clip. He kind of just went prepping for the Ryder Cup, smack this driver as hard as he could, and it was a really extreme hit. Like, you know, when you said last week when you watched him against long drive golfers, he still looked like a conventional golfer.
Yes,
that looks like it changed on this driver shot. He absolutely went for it, feet off the ground, full rotation. It looked as unconventional of a golf swing from one of the best players in the world I've ever seen in my life.
So I would say the average club golfer, they swing, because when I used to do my fitting events, obviously I used to have a flight scope, so I would see them hitting driver. And you do get the odd guy who might be 110 miles an hour, whatever. A young athletic guy who plays rugby who's now getting into golf. But typically, you're looking at between 90 miles an hour to early hundreds, yeah. Really. And you'll know that from your giving, obviously, loads of lessons.
Yeah, and even PGA Tour average was about 112 miles per hour. So that's kind of roughly where I sit and you sit in that kind of speed. Bryson DeChambeau, 148 miles per hour. His ball speed, again, let's put this into a little bit of perspective. If you're 100 miles per hour, which is just above average, and you absolutely crush one as best you can, you get the best performance, everything, you're going to max out 150 miles per hour ball
speed.
And
that's that one that you hit every 5 weeks or so.
That is literally 150 miles per hour ball speed is where most golfers, they're not going to get any faster than that ever.
The average apparently is 133.
Brilliant.
So there you go.
On tour, you normally see him getting closer to 170 miles per hour ball speed.
Yeah.
Some jump over that, but around about that speed. His ball speed on this particular clip was 215 miles per hour.
Oh my God. Well, I watched that video I watched the other day. I think he was quest was to get to 214. I don't think he did it in that video I watched. So to get to 215.
He carried it.
Go
ready
on.
For this? And this was the caption he put over the top. How many greens will I drive? Okay. He carried it 383.1 yards. I mean, that's mind blowing.
But right, obviously he's had an incredible couple of years, and the massive story has been distance. And I must admit now, he is my favourite golfer to watch at the moment because of that.
He's the most entertaining.
100%.
Definitely.
He's the real life Happy Gilmore, but can play the rest of the game as well. Yeah. But, you know, you're obviously the PGA pro. You've seen this kind of thing probably before. And you know, golfers trying to gain speed, gain distance. Certainly, tour pros done it before. Do you think it's sustainable? I don't want to be that guy that calls him out, oh, look, he's back in 5 years. But genuinely, do you think it's sustainable? And do you think it's actually going to materialise into winning more tournaments in the future and helping the, you know, America win the Ryder Cup, etc.?
So there's quite a few questions. Let me break this down on first. Is it sustainable? I think he's clever enough to make it sustainable. Mm-hmm. I think if it was anybody else, if it was somebody who maybe didn't think about those long-lasting effects... Yeah. I think he's doing it with the right information, the right advice, that he is, I'm not guaranteeing this is going to be sustainable, but I feel like he would have definitely factored that into his calculations. Mm-hmm. Do you think?
I do, but the only thing I wonder is that video I watched of the day, it was really good actually. If anyone's interested in watching it, it's on his own YouTube channel he's just kind of started uploading on. And he's this whole day at this long drive facility. Now, that's only one video, and like, you don't know what goes on behind the scenes, but I almost feel like he must be spending less time practicing other parts of his game if he's putting that much into his driving.
Yeah.
And is he kind of going to get so obsessed that other things take a hit, or is it still all focused on obviously winning PGA Tour events?
He's actually got a video coming out tonight. So it's premiere at 6 o'clock UK time. So it'll be out while this podcast is already out. Speed training preparation, Bryson DeChambeau.
I'll be watching it.
He's releasing that tonight. So I don't know. That's the other thing. Like, I feel like he's probably... We'll have all that information about how to make it sustainable. But when you're in the moment and when you're trying to get 250 miles per hour ball speed and when you're hanging around with all these long drivers, does sustainability go out your mind?
You'd think so.
Like people probably train in the gym incorrectly when they're around their peers, when they're trying to show off almost.
It's like when we used to go to the gym sometimes and I was benching more than you and you started absolutely squeezing and tensing and shouting to try and match me, pulling your pec muscles.
That's what I'd have to do. And it wasn't sustainable. It didn't last, I'm afraid. That is fascinating. And I find it amazing because to answer your next question, is it going to help him win more tour events? Yes. Categorically, yes. Because facts show that if he hits it closer to the green, it's easier for him to make more birdies. Mm-hmm. It kind of doesn't always work, as we saw that with Patrick Cantlay in the playoff final when they had 6-hole playoff, I think it was. Patrick Cantlay was much, much shorter. Patrick Cantlay was hitting like 9-irons, etc. into greens. Bryson was literally flicking them and chipping them. Patrick came out victorious in that turn. But I think over a season, if he's sustainable, I absolutely believe it's going to help him win more tournaments. I just hope he shouts four a bit more often, but that's a different topic. But to be honest, he's not the only one. I saw a few guys this weekend that wasn't shouting four again. I feel like it needs to become a movement. And then, what was your last question? Ryder Cup, I think it's going to be fascinating in the Ryder Cup because it's match play.
Yeah, 100. If you're playing against him, he's bombing in past you.
Like, who can honestly... Who's going to be one impaired against Bryson DeChambeau?
No, I wouldn't.
I feel like Rahm would. Mm. I think Rahm would beat him.
I think Rory would fancy a chance.
I think Rory would beat him. But let's say...
You know who I think would really fancy his chances? Poulter.
Yeah.
I know it sounds stupid. I feel like he'd be like, I'm the underdog. I'm going to like...
Yeah, he would.
I'm
actually
the little pup that's going to grind you down.
But then, is he just going to dominate someone like a Tyrrell Hatton or... Bert Wiesberger, someone like that, where I don't know, probably Tyrrell will be able to hold his own, but I mean, so outrageously different. You know, certainly if it was maybe one of the rookies as well for Europe team, like, God forbid, and hopefully this kind of goes our way, but if he gets paired against Matt Fitzpatrick,
that would be...
I can't, as much as I want Europe to win, I can't see that going anyway other than Bryson DeChambeau.
But equally, it's not like Bryson beats Matt Fitzpatrick every round, every tournament, does he at all?
But it's match play. Like, when you're stood on that tee against your opponent and he steps up there and absolutely rips it, I mean, it's just a different mindset, isn't it?
Flip side, though. Imagine you're Ryson,
yeah,
and I'm Matt Fitzpatrick, and you bomb one 370, and yeah, I go 310, right? And we both half it. You're thinking, I just done him by 60 yards, and he's stuck a 4-iron to 3 foot.
Fair dues.
Like, it's almost going to get the other way. But I'm just looking now. So the PGA Tour average for last year, Ryson's number one in distance, and his average is 323.7 yards. Second is Rory at 319, Cameron Champ at 317, Matt Wolf at 315. I'll just read a couple out. Dustin was number seven at 312. So clearly, obviously, Bryson's number one by 4 yards, which at that level is a lot. But, and I know we don't see behind the scenes of necessarily Rory, Matt Wolf, and I know these guys all go to the gym, but for those couple of yards extra that Bryson is than the likes of Rory and etc., do you think all that stuff in the gym and all that long drive training is kind of worth it? Do you think he's, or is he the kind of guy that would see every single yard as being so valuable to do anything for it?
Yeah, you're probably right, because if he's neglecting other parts of his game, is that going to have a detrimental effect? It'll be really interesting to see how it pans out. What pairings would you love to see against each other?
Oh, good question. Let me pull up the teams now.
I've got one I fancy. I'd love to see, and I don't think it's going to happen, but I would love to see Bryson and Brooks on the same team.
Yeah.
Against Rahm and Rory.
Ooh.
I think that would just be epic.
I think we're safe to say that Brooks and Bryson aren't going to be together, though, are they?
But I do not. I don't know. I
don't think so.
I do not.
Well, I heard Luke Donald on the No Laying Up podcast, actually really good. He was on about the pick, you know, how they pick teams and stuff. And apparently, and kind of suppose obviously, there is so much that goes into it. You know, you've got to have a good rapport.
Well, on that, I was chatting to Tyrrell when I filmed with him a couple of weeks ago, chatting to him off sideline, saying you're looking forward to Ryder Cup. Who are you most likely to be paired with? He already knew.
Did he? Did he not tell you?
No, but it's not. It's not Padre just going, oh yeah, Tyrrell kind of gets on with X, Y, and Z.
It's a lot.
It's outrageously statistically analysed.
Well, they do it on, certainly on the foursomes, they really look into who'll be on what tee, who's going to put in more, etc.
Yeah. And even like, who's going to complement each other's strengths.
Yeah.
So for example, if you have got a long drive with a golf ball, who is good with the wedges? Mm. Like, there's no point in putting somebody out that's terrible with the wedges with a long driver,
because yeah,
they're going to hit it too close to the green, for example. But on the flip side, if that player is too short, the component, your partner, are you capable enough hitting those 4 or 5 irons into the green when you need to? So it's very, but we're just saying that on a very, very top line level. It's really broken down over many, many years of analyzing these players, knowing that they're going to be ready for the Ryder Cup.
I feel like it's one of two ways. It's either all these decisions are obviously really essential or overkill.
Yeah.
I feel like you could just go, right, you play with him, you play with him, you're all the best players in the world, go and win the tournament, go and beat each other.
I agree.
Or it actually is super, super important. But now that obviously the Ryder Cup week is upon us, genuinely now, are you more excited than it would be if it's Masters week or Open week or not?
I just love all the different scenarios that could happen this week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Masters, I love the Masters because of the venue, the prestige, you've got the best players in the world. And at the end of it, there's going to be one champion putting on that green jacket. You don't know who's going to play in the last group against each other. You don't know, you can't predict it, can you really? It's very hard to predict. Where in this, you just dream up these kind of scenarios. Like, yeah, you dream up Poulter versus Bryson when it comes down to who's going to win the point for the team. It comes down to these amazing pairings where you're seeing someone like a Tommy and Rory versus whoever it may be, Colin Morikawa and Dustin Johnson or whatever it may be. I feel like because you've got a smaller pool of players to pick from, you almost come up with these different kind of scenarios in your head.
Mm-hmm.
Where the Masters, you don't really get that till maybe the final round. Yeah. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm intrigued to see how people are going to work together, how the teams are going to be picked, who's going to shine, as did someone like a Tommy and Frankie Molinari 3 years ago, and who maybe is going to, you know, not particularly perform. There's been quite a few USA players that will openly admit they've not performed in Ryder Cups yet. Is that going to be another time when they don't again?
Was it? I think it's 9 at the last 12. Europe have won.
Crazy,
and
isn't it?
Most years, most events, they're kind of the underdog. I mean, this year, it's obviously in America, there's going to be little to no European support. As you said, you were invited, you can't get there.
I don't think partners of players can even go.
No,
I'm sure
really?
It's really, really strict. A bit like Emma
Raducanu, I think.
Raducanu. Like, she couldn't have a family there. She had to have just her training coaches. I think it's still outrageously strict. So someone like Lee Westwood, his wife is going because she's caddying. Unless, like, Ian Poulter's wife would be able to go because she is obviously based in the USA.
Ah, yeah.
So there'll be some that will be able to go because they're based in the US, but I reckon there'll be others that just won't be able to go.
I think actually quite a lot of them will have US bases, won't they? Actually, I bet so. Casey, Tommy's got a place out there, I think, now, hasn't he? Yeah. Poulter, obviously. Rory.
Yeah.
I've changed my opinion on the Ryder Cup a little bit. So, oof. I know, I'd said before how it was overrated. And the reason was, I'll just touch on that, was that I feel like, obviously I'm English, but I don't feel necessarily European. So I don't feel like I'm supporting, like, Europe as such. And, you know, like, I don't feel any closer allegiance to, like, Sergio being Spanish than I would, like, Colin Morikawa being American, for example. But I also think I was overanalyzing it.
Okay.
When it actually comes, I watched the Solheim Cup the other day, especially in the final singles, and actually in that moment, I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And I think when the actual Ryder Cup is on, I do, like everybody, I do really enjoy it. I think the only thing I sometimes feel is once it's been and gone, it's kind of, to some degree, irrelevant who won. Because it's not like I've got American mates or they'll give, like, stick to whatever. Whereas, like, with football, if Liverpool play United and Liverpool win, I'm going to give you stick for a couple of days or whatever.
Yeah.
You're obviously a massive football fan now, so you get gutted about it. You're almost in tears. But with the Ryder Cup, it's kind of like, oh, it's been and gone now. But in the moment, it's really good.
Yeah.
Do you get what I mean?
Yeah,
I think I was, and also, like, with a major, it's like, it's kind of a win-win, because if somebody wins a major who's never won before, so let's say Max Fitzpatrick goes and wins the Masters, like, oh my days, he's won the Masters, he's now a major champion forever.
Yeah.
Or if somebody wins one that's already won one, it's like, oh my days, they're seriously going down in history now, they're double major champion or triple or whatever. But it's either going to be USA or Europe win.
Yeah.
So it's not a big thing, but it obviously...
What would be quite interesting for me if you asked casual golf fans,
mm-hmm.
so you've got mates like that, I've got mates like that, who won the last Ryder Cup and where was it? Are they going to really be able to tell you?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, I don't know if that works for majors still. Like, if you said to name me some major winners, actually, that probably still wouldn't work, would it? Like, I'm talking like casual
golf fans. I definitely think more casual golf fans watch the Ryder Cup than some of the majors. Maybe not the Masters as recently, certainly with, like, Sky Sports, they've really bigged up the Masters, haven't they? Like, certainly on Sky Sports News a couple of days before, it's all about the Masters. So I think the Masters and the Open are kind of getting there, but I would say the Ryder Cup is the one that most people get behind, because that team element, people, like, if you're a football fan, you're kind of used to that team sport, aren't you? And you get kind of behind it.
Well, I've seen Rory McIlroy in Bolton this weekend.
Huh?
Yeah.
Actually?
On a massive billboard.
Oh, God.
And I've seen many, many billboards around the Northwest this last few kind of weeks with Ryder Cup imagery on. And again, you don't normally get that. Is that spending from, because it's such a big event for Sky Sports, for the PGA Tour, for the European Tour, for the Ryder Cup themselves, but there must be much more marketing that gets involved, because it's an exhibition match at the end of the day, and there's huge amounts of money to be made in this exhibition match from every kind of all parts, really. But yeah, it's mad seeing these massive billboards. Like, normally they're filled with football or whatever it may be, and to see McIlroy up there, and I think, oh, that's quite cool. Like, that's a bit different to what you'd normally see. And I'm not saying that because you put a billboard in Bolton, suddenly a load of 10,000 Bolton, you know, golf fans are going to start watching it. But it was still quite interesting to see, really.
The other thing, I'm on the Ryder Cup website as we speak now, the official one. You go on Team Europe.
It's not very good, the website.
Well, what's a bit rubbish is, sounds not a big deal, but there's all the players there, like almost like kind of a chest up shot. Half of them have got the official kind of outfit on, and half of them just standard like pictures. And it's like, surely they could have in the last couple of days or since, you know, the team was announced, get a nice picture of them all.
But also, how hard is it just to put a head on somebody else's body?
Yeah.
Like, when Ronaldo signed for United, you already saw him in a United shirt.
That's true.
Do you know, and it wasn't him in a United shirt. And, like, you think they should have just taken, like, Lee Westwood or Shane Lowry's head and stuck it on a different kind of body or frame.
Now, you go back to football now. You really have changed. Did you watch United at the weekend?
I did. I watched United.
I said to my brother, you were close to not supporting them if they'd have drawn, but luckily they won.
Oh, come on.
That Lingard goal was different outrageous.
I even watched Liverpool. Bits did of you? Liverpool match.
How good are Liverpool, though, I'll be honest?
They scored all their three goals from corner. You see that?
I didn't even realise. Oh, yeah. That Keita goal was ridiculous. That volley.
Different level.
You like Liverpool, don't you?
I don't know enough of the Liverpool player. I'm getting... My knowledge of players is ridiculously improving.
For United or for everybody?
And different teams. I think I've completed United now. It's now I'm expanding to different teams. I'm interested, but it's a good league this year.
It's really good.
Like, ridiculously good league. I mean, this is how bad it's got. So I'll watch a lot of the matches on Saturday. Maybe not always live, but I'll try and watch as much as I can. And because obviously family commitments and stuff, I'll try and watch the highlights. The highlights are so good. When the 3-minute highlight, I mean, it's all you need in it, really. And then I'll even watch. I'll look at the table, see where everyone's positioned, everyone's moved. And then I'll even look at when the next fixtures are, like who United playing next. Like, we're playing Villa next Saturday at home at 12 o'clock.
I'm impressed.
First, though, we're playing West Ham in the FA Cup.
West Ham again?
Wednesday in the third round.
Oh, fair play.
And then the Wednesday after, I'm going.
Oh, my days, are you?
European match, United versus Villarreal.
Well, you're a hardcore fan, so I don't even know why I'm surprised. That was a bit of a random intro into the podcast, because today it's just me and you, obviously, as people have probably gathered by now. There's nobody else here. We've kind of got a bit of a chilled out one. We had a bit of Ryder Cup to chat about, and I'm sure the next podcast, Ryder Cup, will have... Oh, no, we're doing the next podcast possibly on Friday. So,
oh, yeah, we might have a guest, but we could also push that one back.
Yeah, we'll see. But we won't be able to talk about the Ryder Cup, will we? Because we don't know who's won at that point. Or do you mean push it back to another day?
Push the one that we've got planned for Friday.
Push it back, save it. Okay, we could do that. So next podcast, we may well catch up on the Ryder Cup.
I think we would do anyway.
Yeah.
Because actually, our next guest could actually be really interesting.
Yeah,
because of his European ties and his American ties.
Yeah, that'll be good.
We'll see how it works.
So today, Rick, I've got a number of good questions from our podcast group listeners. So,
fantastic.
Again, we plug this occasionally. If you listen to the podcast, you enjoy the podcast, and you're on Facebook, why not join the group?
Why not?
Go in the search bar, search for the Rick Shields Golf Show podcast. It'll pop up. Join it. We'll accept you. And you can browse.
And it's only £30 a month.
£30 a month. That comes to my PayPal account. I then give Rick a fiver. But I thought we'll just kind of reel off a few of these. A bit of a chilled one today. Carly last week was class.
Really
went down
good.
Really well. I think she really enjoyed it as well, didn't she?
I think she didn't know what to expect. Yep. And she texted me afterwards and said, I really enjoyed that. She said she doesn't normally watch or listen to anything that she does, but she genuinely sat down and watched it all. And she couldn't believe some of the stories that she told.
Yeah, we did get some good stories out of her.
Really good.
She also said that I was dead sound, didn't she, as well?
Let me just check.
And she did. She definitely did.
Let me just check that message. What did she say?
She said, go on, read it out.
Who was that lad again?
No. I want it word for word for listeners.
Was good fun. Always great to see you.
Carry on.
Guy is lovely.
Yeah, lovely. Go back to see you, Rick, but Guy was better. It's the off-camera, so that people don't see.
Better.
Yeah, it's what it meant. Read between the lines. Come on.
Go on then, what's our first question?
So, I've got a mixture, quite equipment base this week, but I think some of them are interesting.
Okay.
So, the first one is from Adam Stratton, and he said, how do you hit out of a fairway bunker from 180 yards and out?
I saw this one, actually. I think there's a few important factors. You've got to measure whether you can actually go for it. So I think that's your first point of call. Where you are positioned in the bunker, how much lip you've got to get over, how much, obviously, what all the hazards you've got in front of you, whether it's going to be water or more bunkers. And that's then going to determine whether you try and go for it. If there's not much of a lip, if there's not much hazards, and you can maybe get like a 6 or a 5 iron at it, or maybe a hybrid. Other than that, you've got to take your medicine and hit out and play that more like a regulation bunker shot, but with maybe like a pitching wedge. For me, if you're going to go for it, you're going to make sure you don't bury your feet too much into the sand. You've got to keep your weight a little bit left, and you've got to make sure you hit ball first, ground after. Hybrids and fairway woods are really good for those type of shots if you've not got a lot of lip to get over. But as soon as you've got lip to get over, you just got to take your medicine. Bunkers are there to catch you out. They're there to punish you. Sometimes they do. Pitch it out. Try and rescue a bogey or whatever it may be.
One tip I got told years ago, and I do this, you tell me if it's right or not, is grip it tighter.
Yeah, I like that as well.
I think it's because if you grip it tighter, your forearm shortens and you're going to catch a bit more thin, because you kind of want to catch them a little bit thin, don't you, really?
Yeah, well, I did that video recently where I was talking about relaxing and how you can kind of play better golf without kind of changing too many things. And one of those things was keeping your grip pressure quite light, because you don't want to thin it. But you're right. I like to grip it really hard in thick rough so it doesn't snag your club.
Yeah.
And I would grip it harder in a bunker as well. And maybe even, again, on that point where you're trying to catch it a little bit thinner, just grip down on the club a tiny bit as well.
I like that. Before we go on to some of those questions, though, I've got a really good dear Rick for you.
Okay.
We're still getting loads of these in. Obviously, we might start reading a couple an episode, because I feel bad that so many people are emailing with good questions and we only kind of do one. So maybe going forward, we'll do a couple an episode. If you want yours read out, please. And we try also, I do reply to a lot of these and show Rick a lot of them off air as well. So emails podcast@rickshields.com. And we'll try and get as many either done on the show or at least send you an email back. So this one is from...
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'll keep anonymous. Don't think he needs to be, but I'll keep anonymous for this. Dear Guy and Rick, I've just been to American Golf and got properly fitted for a new driver that my wife has bought me as a gift. While I was there, I asked if they could fit me for some irons, and the pro, Alex, was a great guy, got me hitting the P797 iron, and the change from my current clubs was incredible. I knew mine were bad when I bought the 7-iron as well, but they didn't laugh, and the noises they made when I'd hit it didn't say, oh, you got good clubs there, mate. They were 15-year-old Mizunos with what turns out to be a regular flex when I need a stiff. The pro wasn't pushy or forcing me to buy anything. He didn't even mention the price of the clubs until I asked. My problem is they're pretty pricey. I've not been playing properly for too long and I can't really justify the expense even though it will have a big impact on my game. I also don't want to have wasted Alex's time. I feel like I'm left with three options. Should I be asking what's similar to the clubs he's fit me for, but a cheaper alternative? Try to find the closest match to what I've been fit for, but get used ones or older clubs off eBay? Or should I just bite the bullet, pay the retail price and other clubs that I was fit for, because theoretically they are perfect for me and they could last me a long time? Also, as a side note, the set is a 5 to pitching wedge, so I'd be losing 3 clubs from my current set. I'm guessing he's got 3-4 and a sand iron. Is it worth dropping these clubs if I'm going to be getting more out of the better set with fewer clubs? Really enjoy the podcast and the videos. They got me through working from home during lockdowns and got me into golf this year. Joined a club in May and I'm currently a 23 handicap. Thanks, fellas.
Nice. Lots to digest.
There is a lot to digest.
So he's gone getting a fitting. The fitting for P790s and now he's gone, I didn't realise they were that pricey, potentially. I mean, a little bit could have been prevented here. One, the fitter could have made it a bit more obvious. Have you got a budget in mind? Mm-hmm. You know,
sure.
That should be a question that is discussed in a fitting. Unless literally a customer comes in and says, I have no budget, fit me for what is absolutely perfect for me. Well, then the fitter's obviously going to go to town and probably fit you with expensive clubs.
Yeah.
I think if you go in there with a budget and be honest and say, listen, I'm looking at spending somewhere in the region of £300 to £500 for a set of irons, whatever it may be, or I'm looking for some secondhand ones. But be honest and be upfront, because you've got to do that. Because if you go in, like say, what's a set of P790s now is comfortably over £1,000, aren't they?
They're expensive.
So he's got a few options. Let's discuss this. Looking for ones that are similar spec to yours but secondhand is not a terrible option. Mm-hmm. I would potentially avoid eBay. I'd maybe look on Golf Bidder, only because you know they're guaranteed to be real.
Genuine.
There's a lot of fake P790s going around, isn't there?
Yes.
And do not buy them off these dodgy websites where it literally looks like they're too good to be true, because they are not true. So maybe going somewhere to like Golf Bidder. The other thing you can do, if you were to get them from Golf Bidder and they weren't in your perfect spec, you could take that information you got from Alex and actually have them fitted elsewhere.
Yeah.
You'd feel a little bit bad on Alex because obviously you went there for a fitting. But it kind of happens in the real world, unfortunately. I like the other option of, if you liked Alex and he gave you good fitting, going back to him and saying, listen, these are a bit too expensive. Is there anything else in this price range that are going to suit me? Don't get too hung up on this kind of, these clubs are perfect for me, because there's so many different golf clubs, aren't they, guys? Like, having, yeah, even though he's been fitted for these and they're perfect for him theoretically, there's so many golf clubs that are going to be perfect for him, aren't they?
What I've had a quick look at then as well, and I'm not for one, I'm sure the fitting was fantastic, and I'm sure Alex, who we mentioned, obviously, we don't know what store it was, but I'm sure he was also really good. The only thing that's slightly, and I don't want to use the word concern very loosely, is that it sounds like, and it is in most cases, it's a 7-9 versus 7-9 test.
Yeah.
So in most facilities, they will have fitting components for a set of clubs that you want to try, and they'll only have a 7-iron. It's sometimes you might get a 4-iron, or you might get a wedge. And that's because a lot of these sets now clearly are interchangeable, so they can put different shafts in, they can change the lie angle, so they can't really stock every iron from every brand in a changeable head, because it'd just be, cost too much, just wouldn't be, where would they even store it? But when we look, I know he's not got the exact model here, but he said the 15-year-old-ish Mizunos, and he's 23 handicapper, so I'm guessing, I'm kind of presuming here, but they're quite chunky irons. So he's been on the TaylorMade website, and weirdly, on the, I think it's the German site, they've got this mad timeline, like, every year, and you can look at what irons are out. So I've gone 15 years ago is roughly, obviously, like...
On Mizuno?
Yeah, 2005, 2006, roughly. When we look at the irons that are out, so like the MX-25 launched in like 2006, the 7-iron loft of that iron is 34 degrees. And
30.5
in P790s. The 6-iron in P790s is 26.5. And the 6-iron in the MX-25 was 30. So you're looking quite literally at like a degree, a full club stronger.
A different club.
A different club. So if, because he's not quite said here what was so perfect about them, and I might be wrong in saying this, but most people when they go for a fitting, you look at distance, don't you? You go, you've gained 6 yards, you've gained 8 yards, you've gained 10 yards over your current clubs.
And how, let's play devil advocate, how easy is that for a fitter then to sell a product?
Oh, unbelievably after easy. That? Unbelievably
like
easy.
Once you've said, these clubs are 6 to 10 yards longer than your current set,
yeah. Yeah, 100%.
How would you dress that up? I mean, it's so, like, you know how your mates are normally hitting 7, you're going to be hitting 8.
Well, that's it.
You know, now, normally you're hitting, like, a pitching wedge into that green, that you can't, or 9-iron or whatever, now you're going to be flicking a pitching wedge in.
Exactly. And don't get me wrong, the P790s are a phenomenal set of golf clubs. They're very forgiving. They launch it nice and high. They're quite a compact head that doesn't look too ugly. So you do get a lot of good things with the P790. Clubs. So if he might... almost reply to this email and say, actually, no, I was finding that the dispersion was tighter, the feel was miles better, or whatever it might be. But what would, again, what would slightly concern me would be if it was distances going off, you're not really doing a true test. You should be testing your 6-iron against that 7-iron, really, and seeing, actually, now what's the difference? Is there still a jump in distance, or are they closer? Because that is the thing with testing old clubs against new ones. Certainly with irons, you're not really testing the same against the same.
I never, and you've seen me on fittings, I hate hitting my current clubs and then letting the fitter outbeat it.
Well, that's it. Yeah.
It's just, you can, fitters can fudge it as well. And also, let's say you're cold, you start hitting your normal driver or 7-iron, whatever it may be. There's going to be some crap ones in there.
Yeah.
Everything will get kept in.
Yeah.
In that list of 10, let's say you hit. And they'll go, oh, your average is 240. And you think, oh. Thought you hit it further than that, but your average is 240. That's including all warts and all.
Mm.
You then hit the new latest driver. You hit 50 golf shots, but they handpick your best 5.
Exactly, and I think that sounds, when you say it like that, it almost sounds quite dodgy. But I think actually it's almost done by accident, because what will happen is, and again, I used to be a fitter in retail stores and obviously for Nike, which I've mentioned numerous times. But you'd get somebody coming, certainly in a retail store, they'd come in with their own 7-iron. And then hit a few and be a bit nervous, and you'd kind of go, oh, go on, hit a couple, get loosened up. So they'd hit maybe 10 or 11. Then you give them the new iron or the new driver. They shank one and they top it. Oh, you're not used to that yet. Let's just, like you said, let's delete that one. Let's get you used to the driver first. So then, like you said, you end up picking 5 or 6 great shots. And you've not really done it to try and be sneaky. It's just what feels kind of right in the moment. And you go, actually, yeah, you've gained 15 yards.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, firstly, the clubs are club stronger, which you've just mentioned, and you're picking out your best ones. So... Yeah. It's and even things like, again, subconsciously, even though he said the guys are dead sound, they're probably not going to be going, oh, they're nice Mizuno MX-25s from 2006. And go, oh, okay, yeah, good set back in the day. It's almost negative, like, do you know what I mean? And they go, these are the brand new shiny P790s, they go mild, da-da-da-da-da. You're like, okay, yeah, It's all about the vibe, innit?
Of course it is.
It's the vibe.
Let's be honest. You're going into a sales environment.
Yes.
And that fitter, as much as he might be an incredible fitter, and I do believe fitters genuinely go into fitting with the best intentions to get the best for the player, but then they're also incentivized on sales. They're also incentivized on selling you the best product. Is that, do you reckon that's still the case? I know it was when you were at American Golf.
American Golf used to have certain brands that used to earn you more commission. So what it used to be, you're probably saying, well, I can say it now, I've not worked with them since 2013. But what it used to be at the time was there was three different, I think it was called Birdie, Eagle and Par, I think it was called. So Eagle, Birdie, Par, whatever it was. And there were some brands, your big brands, your Titleist, your Mizuno's, your TaylorMade, your Callaway's, all your proper premium brands. As a member of staff, you would get a 1% commission of the profit, right? So what people don't realise, if you sell a set of £600 or at the time, let's call them a grand now, Titleist irons, there's actually not much profit in them.
There's really not, is there?
So there might be £100, let's just say, maybe a bit more, but £100 for round figures. You would have, at the time, got 1% of that. So you'd get a quid. No, a quid.
Oh, yeah, quid,
so it's
yeah.
nothing. So it's literally, it sounds bizarre, that, doesn't it? But it's almost not worth your time. However, then they had lines, I think it was the Birdie line, that you would get 4% of. Okay. So you're getting four times as much. But also, there's more margin.
Yeah, I was just going to say
that. Might be like Wilson's staff. There was Wilson's staff. There's a couple of other brands. So not only that set might only be £600, but there might be £200 profit, and you're getting 4% of that. And then the final line was the Eagle stuff, and that was 6% of the profit margin. But again, it was super profits. That was your Wilson Deep Red, your Nicholas brand, Yonex. Now, Yonex was a strange one because Yonex was super premium with massive margin,
really?
And you got 6%. So if you saw, I told you, there was those two twins that played for United, Raphael and what was the other one called?
Yeah,
you should know those two twins. Were they Brazilian?
Yeah, yeah.
And one of them came in one day to start golf, and I wasn't in, and my colleague sold him literally everything Yonex. And to be fair, it was actually good stuff, but bag, everything, literally. And it came to about like £2,500-£3,000. So this lad got unbelievable commission. The following weekend or the following day or whatever, the other twin came in with his twin and said, oh, he wants exactly everything the same. The lad that served him wasn't in, so I took the sale and got, what at the time was like 60, 70, 80 quid commission off one sale that was just took minutes. So that's how it was back then. So what used to be the worst thing ever, and I hate myself for admitting this, but I will, you'd have somebody come in who would say, I want to buy a drive, I've not got loads, they might have £130, which is, you know, a decent amount. There was two options, really. They either go for TaylorMade Burner, that's a few models old, but it's on sale at 129, or the brand new Nicholas driver that you get a hell of a load more commission on. So I would never just fleece people because it's not fair. I couldn't live with myself doing that. But you'd take them onto the range, and you would be hoping they hit the Nicholas better because you'll get more commission.
That's not on you. You're almost being served that moral dilemma by the company.
100%.
Fabio and Raphael.
Fabio and Raphael. I believe, though, that has now changed at American Golf from what I've heard. I think, apparently, and again, don't quote me on this, but I think they get a flat percent on anything they sell.
Right.
So whether it be whatever brand, I think it's just done of the full price, I think. But so there's less, you're not going to want to sell the stuff that's not right for the consumer as much as you might have done.
Did we say this guy's name or is he anonymous?
No, he's anonymous. I used to get 50p for selling 2 dozen Wilson Deep Red balls. Wow. So if you came in saying, I'm not the best golfer, I lose balls quite a lot on Wilson Deep Red, there's 50p, that's a Mars bar.
But if you sold a packet of 2 dozen Shrix and AD 333?
It essentially got nothing really, like 5p for that, I don't know.
How did it all get tallied up? Because of your code?
When you log in, I remember my code still, I'm not going to say it, it's actually the PIN code that I have on my phone, which is...
How weird is that?
That's really weird, isn't it?
You literally said mobile phone as your mobile phone started ringing.
As I mute that. So you also had a list in the back office as well. Just one sec. Used to have a sheet that it would tell you all the stuff and how much you'd get.
And was there like a leaderboard on this stuff as well?
It wasn't on commission, there was a leaderboard on sales.
Right.
But that's what, because I was quite savvy to it. I wasn't that bothered about having the highest sales in terms of pound notes, but I'd almost want to make the most commission because at the time I was a student, it was as a weekend job, as you know.
Of course.
So if I could make £50 a week extra, over a month, that's clearly £200.
Yeah, a bit of spending money.
But the last one, do you ever remember Fisher Putters they used to have in there?
No.
So Fisher Putters, this was the
what
best.
What brand was this?
That was it. It was a brand called Fisher.
Never heard of them.
I think you will.
Were they blue?
Okay, we'll get they're different inserts. Yes, there was four different inserts. There was black, blue, green, and red.
I do remember them.
And apparently the insert was the same material that Odyssey used. And they were very heavy in the head.
Apparently.
Yeah, very heavy in the head. But they were massive margin.
They still
and they
make
were
them?
So easy to sell because they actually felt really good.
They used to have the one of the inserts was like outrageously soft, wasn't it?
Yes, it was the green, I think.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, they still make them. Go on. And what was the commission? Silly Monday.
No, it was about a fiver, but it was quite a quick sale. So if you could do it. And then the final one was golf insurance. So they brought this thing in, worth a 25, I think, 99, or 24.99. It was golf insurance, right? Okay. So you'd come to the till.
Yeah.
And you've bought a set of irons and a driver.
Yeah.
And I'd served it. I'd go, right, last thing, have you got golf insurance?
No, I've not.
Have you heard about golf insurance before?
No, I didn't even know it existed.
Perfect.
Do we need it?
Yes, 100%, because this is really vital for a number of reasons. Firstly, you've bought a set of golf clubs.
Yeah.
So a lot of people wrongly think they're covered on the house insurance when they're actually not, unless you add them on.
I've not even checked.
Right, okay, well, therefore, they're probably not. So if you leave here now, go to Trafford Centre for some food with your wife,
and
your
which car, I plan to do.
Your car gets broken into, you might not be covered. Right.
Oh, so you're joking.
That's the first
thing.
You want to get it covered.
I've just spent £2,000 on Yonex golf clubs.
Exactly, so £25.99 is nothing. Secondly, it also means unfortunately you hit somebody while on the golf course, it covers you for that.
I am prone to that.
If you're not a member of a golf course, you often won't be covered. So that's really important to get that. And then finally, and this is the thing that I love so much about the golf insurance.
Go on, tell me.
You get three free rounds of golf.
Shut up.
Yeah. At really good golf courses.
So like £25?
It's nothing.
It's
you're getting three free rounds of golf. So even if you buy it now and use it for the free golf, you're covered.
What are the where can I play?
Marriott Worsley Park.
Nice.
Which is the home of Rick Shields.
Nice.
So you'll probably find loads of, if you walk on the left of the holes, shitloads of Pro V1s. It's that pace for itself.
Anywhere. I can play anywhere, basically.
Anywhere, basically.
Wentworth.
Not Wentworth, okay. But you're not good enough to play Wentworth. And also, this is the real sale. I get £1 for selling this.
Oh, that was a big sale for £1.
Yeah, it was. But I was quite good at selling them. But you'd work your... Sorry, I keep saying you'd work
your... That was a big sell for it. You're just going to get £1 for that.
Work your off for a quid.
Bloody hell. Wow. God. And did people buy it?
Yeah. It was, to be fair, it was good for the three rounds of golf.
But they have to fill out paperwork and all that crap.
That was the problem. Yeah.
See, if it was done, I just said, yeah, do it. And magically, all my details was inserted. I'd definitely do it, but...
And then finally...
Are these insurances like... Do they cover like... Cover you for hole in ones?
I think they did, yeah. I think there's loads. But then also, we used to get, if you bought a set of irons, final one I'll do. So you've got your set of P790s.
AG exposed.
Yeah, you've got your set of P790s, sir. Just so you know as well, you actually get 20% off a set of iron head covers with them as well.
No way.
Yeah. So I think...
But I've heard iron head covers aren't cool.
They're not that cool, I'll be honest with you. I'll level with you. But what's really important is you might have these irons for, let's say, 5 years.
I really appreciate your honesty.
Well... I'm always here to be honest. I sold you some clubs for a couple of quid, but other than that, I'm honest. If you put these iron head covers on, you might get ridiculed by your friends, or there might be the world's number one golf podcast might skit you occasionally.
Yeah.
However, it will massively increase your resale or trading value when you come to sell them. Now, I know when you buy a set of irons, you're not thinking about reselling them. You might never do. However, on the off chance in 5 years' time, a new set comes out that's longer, actually it's a stronger loft, but it goes longer, you'll get more money for these, probably around 10-15% more. So for the small price of $24.99, these Castle Bays, you're going to get skidded by your mates, your wife will leave you, but you'll get more money when you trade them in.
I'm told.
And then lastly, it's 3-for-2 on tees. So pink castles get 3 for the price of 2.
I've always needed tees.
There you go.
I'm going to play golf without tees. Wow.
There we go.
Literally came in for a pair of socks.
Yeah.
And I walked out with £2,000 worth of Yonex clubs, a Fisher putter, a Bay Hill head covers that I didn't even know I needed.
Castle Bay.
What? 60,000 tee pegs, golf insurance, and you're £9 better off.
I'm £9 better. I'll be at Nando's tonight.
Wow. I don't know if we answered his question though, did we?
That went a bit wild.
Just be careful when you're getting fitted.
Not just American golf, any retailer.
Any retailer. It's just one of those things. You have to have your head switched on.
And lastly, jokes aside, American golf has really changed the last few years.
Yeah, it's definitely
certainly
improved.
It feels a lot better.
Since Guy's now exposed all the secrets.
Okay, a couple more questions then. David Creasy has asked, how do you decide what videos to shoot each week?
It's a great question. We have three strands of content. I don't want to give too many secrets away here, though. We have coaching videos, entertainment, and equipment. So we try and rotate around that. We typically release three YouTube videos a week. We typically then release somewhere between 10 to 14 Facebook videos a week. If you're not on Facebook, do get on Facebook. It's free to sign up if you don't already. And you can follow the Rick Shields Golf page, the actual page, which is over 1 million followers now. Thank you for that. So we try and make sure that we've got content around those areas, don't we? Me and Guy will chat a lot, we'll brainstorm a lot. Sometimes we'll have floods of ideas.
Yeah.
Like sometimes, literally, we're writing ideas down. We're like, oh my God, we've got like 10 ideas down, and that banks it for the rest of the kind of next few weeks. Other times it's a little bit trickier. Sometimes we're like, oh, what do we film? But then suddenly a piece of motivation comes from somewhere. Either we do a coaching video, something that I've seen. You can get inspiration from anywhere. Like you'll text me at a weekend and go, what about this for an idea? Or I'll text you at another time and go, oh, I've seen this. Should I buy this? Yeah. I've just bought some golf balls that are mega interesting that have arrived today. Yeah. And that's going to be fascinating. So it's just always being on the lookout for new pieces of opportunity, whether it's going to be a really good coaching video, an entertaining video, or a new piece of equipment. Like Break 75, that whole idea started from you, me and Harry sat in my garage.
Yeah.
We were going to film a set of Callaway irons and just weren't inspired.
No.
It was inside. The golf courses were closed. The Callaway irons weren't the most exciting in the world. And we just sat down and went, what can we do? What's different? And suddenly we kind of brainstormed this idea of Break 75. And that obviously ran for 12 weeks and we'll be coming back again next year. But like all those little kind of avenues or series or strands just keep kind of working away, and we have notes on our phones and we'll share ideas all the time, won't we?
Yeah, that's it. It's taking inspiration from other industries as well.
Other
golf YouTubers. What we do
is we steal all our ideas.
If you've got less than 100 subscribers or less than 1,000, we'll just copy all your ideas.
No, we don't.
No, we don't. I must admit, though, I do kind of, I don't want to use the word copy, but do take inspiration from other creators in other industries, because you have to, don't you? Obviously we have a lot of golf clubs we review. We could do so many more videos if we read everything we get sent, but a lot of it's hard to, you know, if a set of irons is a new version of one from the year before, it's very hard to make a story around it.
Or like a random hybrid.
Yeah.
Because it's so like niche almost.
And also I think something like a hybrid, every club's personal, but it's so much down to the individual. Like you might hate a hybrid because it doesn't suit your swing or whatever, and you're pulling it left, it's going really high and floaty. Somebody with a slice, that might be the best hybrid ever. So it's hard, isn't it?
But I think we do a good job of that, being able to identify, if it doesn't quite suit me, who would it actually suit?
But we do that with clubs that we know
wouldn't suit me.
Yeah. But like if we did it with everything, it would be like, it's hard, isn't it? Even like with some of these chunky wedges we do. Well, actually, you do need the help. Yeah, shut up. Okay, another question. There's like this one from Dominic how do you say that? It's Mahan, like that.
I used to work with a guy Dominic that was called Mahan. That surname.
I'm sorry if I destroyed your name, Dominic, but Dominic Mahan.
Mahan.
Mahone. I'm not sure.
I'm going to go with Mahone. Anyway, it's Dominic Mahone.
Really good question. It's, what's your opinion on direct-to-consumer golf clubs?
Brilliant.
So if you're not aware of those, there's obviously brands that you just literally buy from the brand. So Ben Hogan are probably one of the most popular ones, common ones, where you go on their website, you can order them, you choose your length, your lie, etc. They ship them out to you.
I think it's really good because typically you make a bit more of a saving. As we've just mentioned a minute ago, when you have a third party, i.e. a retail store, they're going to want to take money. I think the only thing that kind of trips up these direct-to-consumer brands is the kind of fitting element, because it requires some knowledge from the golfer. That's the only downside I see. But typically, and also struggle to test them sometimes.
Yeah, I think some of them have like a policy we can get them, try them and send them back. But
what would be really good for these direct-to-consumer brands, if they would just be able to do pop-up fitting days sometimes. Yeah. If they could just go around the country, do pop-up fitting days, so you got all that information, then order them online.
Yeah. Well, like you said, the big benefit with the direct-to-consumer is you're cutting out the middleman. Yeah. So whereas normally they'd sell in American Golf or a club pro who's got to make the profit on them alone, not a lot, like we said, but you're just getting them from the brand. So there's no middleman.
The only thing you don't typically get then, you might not pick up as many bargains, let's say. So for example, if you're a retailer and you've got a stock of the old TaylorMade driver on the shelf,
true.
And then new stuff comes in, that typically gets
knocked down
in price. Direct to consumer, you might see a little bit of that as they tail off that production line, but really they can probably just stop producing that product and bang, they're in with the new product at the same price.
Yeah, and that's it as well. You're also going to find if you walk into a pro shop and, you know, the pros had a good day or whatever and you want to buy a new Sim 2, you might go, oh, I'll tell you what, you're a good member, I'll do you a good deal on that and do you a stupid discount that he can do. It's his own stock. He does what you can give it to free if you wanted to. Whereas on a direct-to-consumer, it is the price. So although it's cheaper typically, you're not really going to get a discount necessarily.
The other things as well, and we've obviously had a lot of talk about American Golf today, but, you know, if you go and if you can find a really good pro or a really good service, someone like a Dan Webster, we've had on the podcast mm-hmm. before, and you get a really good fitting, and like I say, he's the pro and you're a member of his golf club, or you go through his driving range and you know, you feel like, oh, I know Dan wouldn't do anything bad to me. He's going to fit me in the right way. He's going to get me the best deal. And he does that kind of handing over, doesn't he?
Yeah, handover session.
He'll invite you down and unbox the clubs and you get to hit them in front of him, and he might do a gapping session for you and throw in like a personalized towel or a hat, or it's those extra bits you don't get from direct to consumer. You maybe don't get from American Golf that you can only really get from independent, you know, a pro or someone like a Tour X or a TXG over in Canada. It's those little touches that you sometimes don't get, but then obviously you pay more for those little touches, I guess.
I think it literally comes down to what you want, what kind of clubs you want, what experience you want. You can go to Sports Direct and buy a driver that's going to be cheap, that's going to perform all right, off potentially without being with a sales member of staff who's got no interest in golf, who's normally on the trainers, who's on golf for that day. But obviously, if you're going out spending a lot of money, you might want to go to somewhere that's a bit more specialist, like a Tour X, and really get that experience. So it's all down to what you want, really. The last thing as well, the benefit of direct-to-consumer is they typically don't sponsor tour pros either, and they don't spend loads and loads on like marketing materials. So when you go, think about it, when you go into any store that's got a big TaylorMade stand, that has to be paid for from somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay, one more, and well, a couple more, actually. This is definitely on you, Rick, because I don't have a clue on this one, but from Joe Fraser, advice for a new assistant pro in the golf world.
I probably just have to rewind myself to when I was assistant pro. For me, I was just a sponge and I really worked as hard as I could. There was a couple of things I did really well as an assistant pro. I tried to learn from my senior pros that I was working underneath. So at the time I was working under Natalie Adams and Peter Eyer at MIA. I noticed what they did well, what I would take inspiration from. I noticed how they ran their teaching diary, for example. I noticed how Pete ran his business and his staffing and his rotors and his buying of stocks. That was something I was always very intrigued, more than just sat back and kind of just did my job and turned up every day. I asked questions. I said, you know, to Natalie, you know, you've got six juniors there on a camp, how do you separate the six juniors in an hour so they all get the same amount of level of coaching? Or how do you deal with different ability golfers in the same group, for example? How do you work out your taxes? How do you work out your marketing, your advertising? I either learned from observation or learned from asking. And again, with Pete on the pro shop side of things, more the business side of things, like I was very interested in, okay, what's the new stock coming in? How much did we pay for that item? How did we get bulk buy on if we bought all this stock? What bulk buy did we get? What's our payment terms? And all these things that from a business, I didn't know. I knew how to play golf, so to speak, loosely. Mm-hmm. But it was all these other things now as I turned it into a business. Well, I want to know every single aspect of it. So as an assistant pro, I very much wanted to kind of digest information. And for me, I got a lot of information as I started to become, you know, more active on social media, started to soak in what other coaches were saying. And now there's a wealth of knowledge out there that you can dive into. Just soak in as much as you can. My last piece of advice, and honestly, I think this massively helped me in my whole development, and I learned this from Mia, and this really got instilled in me, have a really strong relationship with members. Mm-hmm. Like, learn their names, talk to them, be open with them. Like, build these kind of relationships and rapport, because even now, how many years have I been, like 15 years I turned pro. I know people I met 15 years ago as a member that I'd classify as friends now or really good business people that I might need in the future. Do you know what I mean? So at a golf club, you're very lucky. You get to meet a lot of individuals from all different sectors of life.
Yeah.
learn, get to know them. Like, don't be a recluse and kind of hide away and almost just be the assistant that's grinding on the driving range every day, which obviously is a part of your world. Speak to members, ask them how they're doing, what they do for the work, go and play golf with them. Yeah, yeah. Like, it's so important to kind of build those relationships.
I think, again, I'm not a PGA pro. The only thing I would say from my time in the golf industry is some people doing the PGA might literally want to aspire to have their own shop and have a good business doing that and fitting and coaching, and that's perfectly fine. There's so many successful people, e.g. Dan Webster, who've done that. But equally, there's so many more avenues now for PGA pros, probably more than ever, like whether it be having, like you said, your own driving range, or, you know, jokes I'd working like an American Golf could be a good career for some people. If they just want
a golf marketing company, exactly. A YouTuber.
Well, that's it. And even like when I was at Nike, loads of the sales reps were PGA pros who'd gone into that. Yep. So even little things, I'm sure this you would anyway, but like every rep that comes in from Titleist, from Callaway, from Mizuno, get pally with them, you know. Yeah. Don't fake it, but just be nice. And you never know, there might be a sales rep job coming. You think, actually, I do want to get into that. And being a PGA pro is a massive head start over other people that aren't.
Correct.
So, you know, don't just limit yourself to the shop, although that's also a great job. There's loads to do. And then last one, this is something I've not got any real ideas on, but we may as well ask it anyway, see if you've heard anything. From Baden Aldridge, have you heard any rumours surrounding 2022 clubs? If so, what are you most excited by?
I don't feel like I've learned.
I think this time next month we'll have a different answer. The only thing I have heard, I've told you this, speaking to, and I'm not going to say which brand, I had a phone call with one of the big, big brands recently, very briefly, just seeing how we're getting on. And he said to me that next year's driver from said brand is going to be very, very kind of revolutionary and not just a little iteration of what's currently out. Do you remember I told that to you? You do. I'll tell you off if you want.
Give me the initial of said person. Just the first initial. Second initial of said person.
S.
Oh, doesn't work.
Well, second initial. Surname.
I've got it. Okay.
And apparently, I don't know why I've not seen it yet. I probably will this time next month. We might have started to see stuff. It's literally the time now where we start to see product.
What you'll normally see is that drivers typically will launch at the start of next year. So 2022, start of the year, that's when the drivers launch. We will typically get them at the start of December. We'll learn about them in kind of November time.
Yeah.
So like I say, coming up soon, we'll have much more knowledge. I've not seen that much yet. I don't feel that excited yet.
I was going to say, that's the words out of my mouth. I don't at all.
But brands have a way of bringing stuff out that makes me intrigued. Whether it always works, I'm not sure. Well, doesn't always, but I'm intrigued to see what's coming next.
Well, what was it, see the other day that Patrick Cantlay won with loads of old clubs?
Yeah.
And like, I know, again, we've said this kind of thing before, but it does just prove, doesn't it, time and time again, that you don't need the latest and greatest. But what the brands will 100% do, we're both in the same boat, not that excited right now, but 100%, start of the year, they'll come out with fastest face ever, this, that, the other, and you're like, okay, let's try it. And they'll probably be good. And you go, yeah, it's better than last year's by a couple of yards, or it's more forgiving, or it looks better. So we'll end up wanting it. People will end up wanting it. People will buy it. But as it stands, I'm not bothered.
Yeah. We'll see what the future holds.
Couple of things then, Rich, before we end. How far are we now, Matt?
54 minutes.
Oh, nice. Again, a little bit of housekeeping. If you're watching this video on YouTube, please like down below, subscribe to the channel. Watch people just comment as well, Rick.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Okay. Say nice things. It's been a very informative podcast today.
Yeah, and it's free.
Oh, so people don't pay for this?
No.
Oh.
And if you're listening on Apple and you want to give us a 5-star rating, please do. We always appreciate those. And then obviously any more emails, podcast@rickshields.com. And we are, maybe soon we'll announce the guests that are coming on the live episode. They're all locked in and confirmed. So maybe, and lastly, actually, I can't do a podcast next Monday. I'm off next Monday and Tuesday for my birthday.
Oh, for God's sake.
So we'll have to do Friday, maybe do two, or just do that one anyway. So.
Well, would that be 98 and 99 anyway?
It would be if we do it that way.
Okay, we'll have a think.
Yeah, whatever.
Oh, it's your birthday next week.
Yeah, 31.
Wow, how do you feel?
Old, grey and fat, put on a stone to my wedding.
Welcome to the club. It's
look,
getting married is
couple of blokes, put on a bit of timber, love our footsie, like a beer occasionally.
Love our food. What do you do? We're just one of the lads.
Just pure lads.
Of the lads. Yeah.
Swear loads as well now, don't we? Off camera. What are you looking at your arms for?
I'm just debating whether to get United tattoo on my left arm or my right.
I think on the right arm.
CR7.
And then England badge on the other one.
I like
Bulldog
that.
On your leg.
I like that. Barbed wire somewhere.
Yeah. Big, just a big off tribal right down the right arm.
And then Cantona on my chest. That one that Cantona used to have on my chest. Because just to show that I used to also like football.
Oh, yeah, you're not a new fan.
No, I'm old school fan.
Really old school fan.
Guys, thanks for listening. Random one, but hopefully you enjoyed it. Like, subscribe, review, and we'll see you next week with Ryder Cup and a cool guest.
What a flat ending.
Thanks for listening. Cheers. Have a great day at work, everyone, or whatever you're doing. If you're in the bath, have a nice soak.
I've all took my headphones off. Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.